Welcome, everyone, to the SI Media Podcast. I'm your host, Jimmy Traina. Thanks so much for joining me for another week. Appreciate it. This week's episode will feature an interview with Joe Buck, just back from London, calling Yankees Red Sox. He has the MLB All-Star Game next week, and we get into a variety of topics, including the NFL, U.S. Open coverage. If you're a Howard Stern fan, we talked about the 20th anniversary of the Gary Love tape, which was amusing. A couple of interesting things from Joe Buck. He talked about having Nance on the coverage of the U.S. Open and revealed some restrictions that CBS put on Jim's appearance. So that was interesting. Joe also revealed that while flying back from London, he saw the movie about Paige, the WWE wrestler, and cried on the plane. So Joe gave us some good stuff. So make sure you get ready for Joe Buck. Before we get to Joe, quick thing. Last week, Seth Rollins, if you're a wrestling fan, was on the podcast and went viral, I guess, for his comments about Dean Ambrose. If you're a wrestling fan and you missed it, check that out in the archives. We also, last week, in addition to Seth Rollins, if you're not a wrestling fan, we had Jason Barrett on, who's in the radio business, and he talked about the greatest sports TV studio shows of all time, and we talked about the biggest national radio shows. He comes in about 28 minutes in, so we had Seth on for about 27 minutes, and then Jason Barrett. So that's last week. 2 weeks ago, Scott Van Pelt was on the podcast. So if you missed them, go into the archives, listen, and then if you can subscribe, rate, and review, if you have never done that, it helps tremendously and is greatly appreciated. And let's get right now to Joe Buck of Fox Sports. All right, joining me now, regular here on the SI Media Podcast, always a fun chat, just back from jolly good London, Fox's Joe Buck. Joe, how are you?
I'm good, Jimmy. How are you?
I'm well. I mean, I'm a Yankee fan, so I enjoyed the weekend, although I thought not exactly the best look for Major League Baseball, but I don't want to put you on the spot and get into that. But tell me, well, first, was it a quick hit for you, go to London, call Yankees, Red Sox, and were you out of there the next day? Did you stay for both games? You only called the one game, right, on Saturday?
Yeah, I took full advantage of Fox's dime, and I got there early. I flew in on Monday with three friends, landed in Ireland, played golf Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, got to London on Thursday, and played golf Thursday. I could lie to you and tell you that I was diving into all the numbers and all the research that I need to do for a big Yankees-Red Sox game. But I didn't start all that in earnest until Thursday night and Friday, and then Saturday did the game and got out of there on Sunday.
Give me the vibe there, the people of London, the excitement level. Were you surprised at all? Were they into it? I mean, from what I saw during the game on Saturday, the fans there looked into it, but I would imagine if you're going, you have some interest in baseball. Were you surprised at the excitement level of it, or do you think baseball has a long way to go still in London?
Yeah, I'm kind of all over the map on this answer. I was surprised at how normal the actual game felt when I was there, and I can only tell you, you know, I think when we're as associated with these leagues as we are, whether it's the NFL or Major League Baseball, the common thought would be that I'm just towing the company line. But I work for Fox. I don't work for Major League Baseball. And I can tell you that the game itself, even though the game was just crazy and ended up 17-13 and was unlike really any game I've done in a long, long time, it felt like a Major League Baseball game. It felt like I was sitting there watching a game at Sky Dome or in Montreal back in the day, just because of the venue. It just had kind of that feel to it, but it was still good. And I thought the fans were into it. Like you said, if you're going to bother to go, you probably are into it to some degree. And I felt that there were a lot of either expats there or fans that traveled to see the Yankees and Red Sox and said, well, they're going to play in London. Let's make it a trip. And I thought they reacted at the right time. So I thought there was great crowd noise. It had a good atmosphere. That said, I don't think there was a ton of media coverage on it, you know, just kind of sitting in the hotel room when I did and watching the local news channels or watching the BBC. I didn't sense that there was a lot of conversation on it. The next day, as I was getting ready to head to the airport, the only video they showed was of Harry and Meghan being at the game, nothing right. about the ball game. So I think there's still a long way to go, but I was glad I was there, and I thought the atmosphere was cool, and I think the players actually had fun.
I was going to ask you to compare it to sort of the NFL, and then I'm realizing in my head as I'm thinking the question, you probably have never called a London NFL game because those are always crappy games, and you get the A game for Fox, right? Or have you ever done a London? I would assume no, right?
No, I haven't, but my crew has. So Troy's been over there, the producer, Richie Zients, the director, Rich Russo. They've all been over there for that stuff, but I was doing the Major League Baseball playoffs of the World Series. So it's usually in October, and that typically takes me out of the mix.
Right.
But, you know, along those lines, when you say they send a crappy matchup, that wasn't the case with Major League Baseball. I mean, I think they sent their best. They
right.
sent the Yankees and the Red Sox, and next year it's the Cardinals and the Cubs. And, you know, if you're going to go, you might as well go. And I think they deserve some credit for not just saying, oh, well, we went. You know, they sent them a good series, and they should send them another one next year.
So was the ball flying around because of the stadium or the bad pitching? What was the reason for all the runs over the weekend?
Yeah, I don't know. The mound is the mound, and it's still 60 feet, 6 inches from the plate. Not all mounds are identical. I asked Smoltz during the break what he thought the reason was for all these runs. And I said, is it the mound? Is it something? He said, no, you know, they're about the same. I guess the guy who travels and does the international setups is the guy that was in Atlanta. So he was told that was like a typical Atlanta Braves mound. And we know how great their pitching was. So I don't think it was the atmospheric conditions
right.
Or any sort of setup. I just think the pitching was bad.
Right.
And I think when you look at the Yankees and the Red Sox, the Yankees are phenomenal. We know that. Their lineup just keeps pounding. But they've got some work to do, and I really think they need to add another front of the end of the rotation kind of guy in order to match up with a Houston or some other team in the postseason. And I think they will. But I don't know that their pitching is that great, and certainly Boston's pitching staff is just overworked. Their bullpen is on fumes already,
right?
And we're not even at the All-Star break. So I think both teams' pitching is mediocre, and it showed because both teams' lineups can just pound you.
Yeah, I don't want to get into like a hardcore baseball discussion, but as a Yankee fan, you sound like an animal if you complain about the roster when they're whatever they are, 53-28 or something like that. But here's what I would disagree with you. I think they need two starting pitchers. If your goal is to win the World Series and get through the playoffs, you're not doing it with J.A. Happ, C.C. Sabathia, who can't go more than 5 innings, and you know Severino's hurt. Paxton has never once in his life pitched in a playoff game. So I actually think they need two starting pitchers, the way they're constructed right now.
Yeah, I agree, and I know you don't want to turn it into that,
yeah.
And so we won't, but I didn't love their offseason. I mean, I think they've put so much in their lineup. They've needed pitching for a long time. It's not just right now. I like Paxton's arm, but he's not proven anything
right.
yet, and he's been okay. And Sabathia is at the end. I mean, he can go top to bottom. Losing Severino hurts him, obviously, but he doesn't look like he's coming back. And if that's the case, then you do need to.
I mean, they have enough chips where they can bring in a pitcher. So they're, you know, the trade deadline will be interesting from the Yankee perspective. I got to believe they're going to bring in a big name starting pitcher.
Yeah, I agree. And they've already floated the whole notion that.
Yeah.
Well, we're not going to give up Brazier. There's no way we're not going to do it unless we get a younger guy that's under control for a couple of years. And I guarantee you, Frazier is going to end up in August in another uniform.
And it bums me out. I want to see him stay here, but that's a whole other topic. So then next week, you have the All-Star game on July 9th. Do you still get excited for the MLB All-Star game, or is it just something on the schedule that you do?
No, I do. I think it's great for the game. We could debate all day the whole this time it counts and what have you. I think when the this time it counts came along, it came along at the right time because it was trending toward being an irrelevant game, and I feel like that time, those years of this time it counts, at least put something on the table and kind of reset the attitude toward the All-Star game, where these guys were not one at bat, two at bats, and then they're going to the FBO and getting on a net jet and going home. I feel like the game means a little bit more to these guys than it did prior to that. And if it means something to them, then I think it means something to baseball fans, and I'm certainly that. And I think the game is in good young hands as we sit here in 2019. And for the first time, I look at the starting lineups. I said this during the game the other day in London, and I look at the National League, and I think, man, for the first time, they are loaded with good young talent. And the American League's still good, but I think the National League has made huge gains, with guys like Acuna and others that are coming along and have the ability to be superstars in the game.
The Major League Baseball All-Star Game is still the best one out of the four sports. I mean, NFL doesn't even really count at this point, but I feel like with Interleague, it's hard to get that juiced up for it. But as a broadcaster, it's still got to be something. It's still something you don't see superstars from both team from every team. So I guess there's still that juice there.
It's the hardest game we do. It's the hardest game I do by a factor of a lot.
Because,
I won't put a number on it, but yeah. When you think about, everybody's got a story. And when you do a game, you've got two or three guys that you're highlighting, and you can do basically 20 minutes on each guy. Well, now you're doing a game filled with rosters, and everybody is that player. And so you feel like you walk out of there with a third of the work and a third of the stories told. And that sucks. That's a bad feeling because – after the first three innings, and we've got promos in there, and we're interviewing players out on the field, and all that's good, especially the interviews with guys that are in the game, that's been cool, but you direct it all toward him, and meanwhile, three guys have come to the plate, and you haven't really said one thing about why they're in the game that year, or what makes them an all-star. And now for every guy that comes to the plate, there's somebody new on the mound, there's somebody getting ready in the bullpen. They all have stories, and you just never get there. So you're running on a treadmill for 3 hours, and guys aren't taking long at bats because they don't want to strike out. So it is actually kind of the fastest-paced, fastest-moving game we do all year, but you leave unsatisfied because you don't really get everybody's story out. I feel like you cheat players.
Yeah. I'd love to see it one year where they just played the starting roster and played it like a real game. This every team has to be represented, and the manager tries to get every player involved. Play it as a straight game, and maybe that'll do something, but that's just
I agree. It's funny you say that. I said that to one of the managers last year. I don't remember which one of the two. I said, if we're not doing this time it counts, why can't you just have your roster be what it is and you play the starters for the most part,
right,
the majority of the game, if not a normal game? And if players don't like it because they made the trip there and they didn't get to play, well, then be better next year and be a starter, and then you get to play the entire
right.
game. It feels very participation trophy-ish. I'm with you. That's the way it used to be way back in the day, and I think I would love to see it go back to that.
And I think if you're named to the All-Star team and you don't play, I think you're going to be fine with it if you're a major league player. You're probably making $100 million. You get a vacation from your family for a couple of days, and you hang out with the guys. It doesn't matter if you play. That's not one where you're going to get a lot of sympathy. Plus, you probably got a bonus for being named to the team. You don't have to play, so enjoy your money. And see, that was my beef with Now It Counts, because when it was Now It Counts, or whatever the phrase was, if you're going to determine home field, then it should be the best players doing that. But the starters play two innings and they're out. How is that fair to determine home field?
No, I know. And then you get into the whole idea. It wasn't a perfect situation, right, I believe. But just flip-flopping back and forth between leagues for home field advantage wasn't really that thrilling either. And, you know, again, it became irrelevant. And I don't feel like it's irrelevant anymore. It was a great spectacle. But when the tie happened, I guess that was in 02, it was like something's got to change because you've got these great players.
Right.
And Barry Bonds was still playing in the game, and it was, you know, you've got these superstars, and they're one and done, two and done, and they can't wait to collect their bonus, get their autographs to bring back to their various charities, and good for them, and then get there at that and go home. Go to wherever the team's going next, or go for a day and a half or 2 day vacation. And then it's like, well, why are we even doing this?
Right,
I think that at least reset the thinking on it.
I know you've made the very, very smart and sort of, I guess, necessary move of not really checking Twitter that much, especially your mentions. But since I monitor Twitter basically for a living, which is a sad statement right there, but I noticed this year, after the first year when Fox got golf in the U.S. Open, obviously there was a lot of blowback. I saw very, very little criticism this year of Fox and yourself covering the U.S. Open. Did you get a sense that strides have been made? People are less harsh in response to you guys broadcasting it? Or because you're not paying attention, you're out of that world and you didn't even get that sense?
No, you get the sense. I mean, I think you get the general feel. Yeah. I can remember walking out of Chambers Bay, which was 2015, and I will take it to my grave that for the first time out, you know, I'd never done golf. Greg Norman hadn't ever really been a lead analyst before. But it kind of ended there. I mean, Faxon had done some TV. Steve Flesh was new but really good. McCarron was on the ground and was terrific, I thought, and still think on the air, but he's tearing up the Champions Tour, so he's not going to come back to us. And then for the most part, the people in the truck and the men and women out on cameras were people that had done it for ABC or NBC for years prior, and it really wasn't that big of a deal. I think people, you know, we've talked about this a thousand times, but they, when it's something new, they're going to beat you up, and then you take your lumps, and you come back at it the next year, and then you have a few less lumps, and you get better at it. I mean, there's no doubt we're way better at it. We've learned a lot of lessons. But when Johnny Miller ripped the whole decision-making for the USGA going with Fox, because Fox wrote the biggest check, he said, you know, well, you don't just fall out of a tree and do a U.S. Open. And he was right. I mean, he was right. And he was more right when he said that than I was aware. And I think those of us, certainly me, you know, we took it like, well, how dare he say that? But he was right. But that's the only way you can do it, and that's the only way you can get better at it.
Right.
And, you know, those at ABC, back when NBC got the rights 20 years prior, could have said the same thing, but you have to get in there and do it. And so now I think we're better. I think the venues have been kind of more traditional U.S. Open venues, and they will be now going forward. Everybody walked out of there like, that was a hell of a week, a lot of hours on TV, and I think we're doing stuff at Fox Golf that I don't see other places doing, and have, since we got into the game, they've all tried to copy a lot of that stuff, and I think that's the at least technology-wise, and I think that's the best compliment that our people can be paid.
Whose idea was it to get Nance on a telecast during the U.S. Open?
Eric Shanks, my boss, and Larry Jones, another one of my bosses, were driving by in a golf cart on Wednesday, and they had just seen Jim Nance, and they were telling me about it. And they said, what if Jim came on? Would you be upset with that? And I said, are you kidding me? That'd be great. I said, do you want me to reach out to him? And they're like, yeah, would you? And so I'm not that kind of guy that's
yeah.
like, this is my booth, this is my territory, I'm going to bolt it, you can't come in here. I'll share it with anybody who wants to be there. I wish that over the years Vin Scully would have taken me up on coming into the booth for an All-Star game mm-hmm. when it was San Diego or for a World Series, but he didn't want to do it. And that's his right to say no. And Jim did, and CBS was cool with it. Fox was, you know, fantastic about it, and so my boss brought it up, and then I asked him on the air to try to make it seem more, I don't know, real, and instead of me just texting him.
Right.
And he came in, and it was great. You know, I think that's good, and I, for the most part, people like seeing the CBS guy on Fox.
Right.
And we loved having him in. I thought it was neat.
Well, when you think about the reasons why someone wouldn't do it or would say, I mean, they're just so silly. And I think that's a sort of, I don't think that's on you guys as play-by-play men. I think it's an executive thing. I mean, when you think about it, what is the harm in Jim Nantz appearing on Fox for, you know, a discussion for a few minutes? I mean, especially in the NFL, people are going to watch the football game they're going to watch. If Joe Buck does a crossover and appears on CBS or people, you're not changing anyone's life, but there's no downside to doing it.
Well, I think people get way too worked up about all that stuff.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, in the world of social media, if you want to, you know, lick your thumb and put it up in the air to find out which way the wind's blowing, you're going to run out of saliva because it changes every 2 seconds. So, you know, in this case, it made all the sense in the world. He lives above the 18th hole. He's kind of Mr. Pebble Beach. He does the event every year in February. And he's a good guy, and he's a great broadcaster, and the best golf broadcaster I've ever heard in my life. So I'm sure me listening to him over the years has crept into my, you know, my whatever twist I've tried to put on calling golf. I'm probably just a wannabe ripoff artist, so why not have him on and pay tribute to the guy?
Right.
But there were stipulations from CBS, and they were protective of Jim, just like I hope Fox would be protective of me if I went somewhere else. It was, hey, let's only 5 minutes. And we were like, okay, well, if they say five, they'll be okay with 10. And then, you know, don't let him call or don't have him call any live golf. And I was like, well, that sucks because I wish he would sit there for a half hour and call live golf with Paul, and I'll chime in every once in a while or not. And he sat down, and the first thing he said, I think Tiger hit a shot, and he called it. Just, I think that's just a reaction by him. And Mark Loomis, our producer, in my ear said, well, I guess that's out the window with him not calling golf. But it would be weird for him not to. So I wanted him to stay longer. CBS kind of put the brakes on it, and that's where it's at.
That's fascinating. Yeah, what's the harm in him staying a little bit longer? But listen, I will say this. The reaction to it was very positive. I didn't see really any negative. Again, why would a fan dislike that if they're watching at home? So were there any other restrictions or just 5 minutes and no play-by-play?
Like what? That was it,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
The funniest part, and I said going out, you know, he walks in with a credential around him. Like, who's going to stop Jim Nantz walking? First of all, he lives in the neighborhood. And secondly, you know, he's never met a stranger. So he came in, and we went to a commercial, and I heard from the back of the studio, "Hello, friends." And I was like, okay, here we go.
Yeah.
He's here. And then off we went.
It's a fascinating media topic, and I don't know. It might not be fair to put have you discuss it, and I don't know how much you can even pay attention to it because you're doing your own games, but Nantz is sort of, once they made the switch from Sims to Romo, Nantz is having sort of a little popularity bump with viewers. There's not that venom that was there years ago. It's interesting, and the reaction then with him joining you guys on the golf was, I thought, overwhelmingly positive, so it was a good thing to see.
Yeah, well, I don't know anybody who's met the guy. And I have friends who have played golf with him that have nothing to do with television, have nothing really to do with the sports world. They're just people whose opinion I trust. I don't know him that well. I really don't. I've never really been around him. And a couple different people from a couple different friend circles said, oh, I played golf with Nantz. And my question was, well, how was that? You know, what kind of a guy was he? And they loved him. And these are guys that I hang out with and I enjoy being with, and I don't know. There's nothing I see that I don't like, and there's nothing I hear him do that I don't think is terrific. So
yeah.
Again, I mean, all that stuff goes into why you have him. If you hear that, oh, well, he's just some obnoxious jerk, or, you know, if I didn't think he was as great as I think he is, then, you know, maybe you don't. But I really don't. I never saw any downside to having him on, and I'd do it again. We had Johnny Miller on early on. There was some talk about him maybe coming on and being a part of our coverage one day. I just think all that makes people enjoy the moments a little bit more because they hear a familiar voice and an unfamiliar network, and that can be interesting and fun.
I had Nance on this podcast the week after the Masters when Tiger won, and I had never had him on before. I met him a couple of times at CBS NFL events, and he was always extremely nice to me. And he was nice enough to come on the podcast after Tiger won, and he was on for about an hour, and I thought he was tremendous on the podcast. I was just he gave a take on everything. He was opinionated. He's what you want in a guest, and the reaction from listeners was fascinating because a lot of people agreed with me. The numbers were good, very very good for it, and a lot of people thought he came off as arrogant, egotistical, or whatever. And it's just amazing how people can hear the same exact thing, get all these different takeaways from it. Now, maybe because I'm sort of in this business, I sort of, in my head, if you're on TV, you're going to have an ego. It's a matter of how big it is, but there's going to be some ego there. You just have to. And
it's funny though, Jimmy, because I agree with you. You know, I get that too. And
right.
The woman that I ended up marrying initially when I was trying to get her number and going through Rich Eisen because Michelle worked the NFL Network. Her reaction was, "Oh, not him. He seems like such an arrogant son of a bitch." And Rich was like, "Why do you say that? He's a great guy. He's a nice guy. He's one of my best friends and in the business at least." And she said, "You know, I don't even know. I've never heard one bad thing about him from anybody who knows him. But it's just the perception I get from a national car rental commercial he did."
Right.
And you just never know what people perceive as arrogance. And so if I do go on Twitter and I see a lot of that, you know, oh, he's just a smug, arrogant guy or whatever, you almost just laugh at it because none of those people know what I'm about at all. So the reason why I wrote my book, I think, more than anything else, is to try to get out there who I really am, or go on your podcast, or go on with Stern. But you know, I think the best thing I got from being my dad's son and getting into this business was I saw a guy that, you know, said hi to everybody. There's nobody that he worked with at CBS that hasn't come up to me that has said anything but glowing things about my father.
Right.
And it's the greatest gift that he gave me, because I was always around it as a kid, and I never felt like that was the finish line, becoming a big league announcer. I was doing it at 21, and so it felt normal. And then it was like, well, if it's normal, then be a good guy while you do it. And I saw my dad do that when I was a little boy. I saw him do that when I was a teenager. I saw him do that when I was a man and a father and a husband.
Right.
And he never changed. And he said to me when he dropped me off in Louisville, when I was doing my first year at AAA, we drove up together from Florida after spring training, and he said, you know, here's a couple things. Nobody cares that you're doing the game. They don't care that I'm doing it. He said, one day I'm going to die. Maybe I'll die in the booth, and two guys will be walking in downtown St. Louis and say, oh, did you hear Jack Buck died in the booth last night? And the other guy will go, oh, wow, that's too bad. Did the Cardinals win? And that's how people think.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
They don't care about the announcer for the most part. And don't act like they do, and
well,
you're going to be okay.
I would push back on that a little bit from this standpoint. Your dad and that generation didn't have to deal with the internet. And I think because of the internet, not just the internet, but also, you know, the fact that we have 5,000 cable stations and everything. We know the announcers more personally, like even just you telling that story about how, you know, meeting your wife through Rich Eisen. We didn't know that about the generation before in terms of announcers. We see you guys in so many other places, whether you're, you know, you might be on, you know, you had your own show on HBO, and there's always, you know, Nance and you do commercials. So I feel like it's such a different time from when they did games. When your dad called games, I bet people heard him call a game and never saw him again outside of those 3 hours when he called the game. Whereas now everyone has this. Even if you're not on social media, you still have a presence because of just the world we live in now and technology.
Yeah, and, you know, a couple things about that. When my dad had those 2 years with Tim McCarver and was broadcasting the World Series on CBS with Tim, and that was right after Brent Musburger was fired. Otherwise, my dad was going to be doing the number two game with Jim Cott, and I think life would have been a lot easier. But my dad was kind of a fish out of water, was working with somebody who was kind of the toast of the network, and it was not the Cardinals broadcast anymore. Even though my dad had done, you know, thousands of national broadcasts on radio and some on TV earlier, he got blasted by Rudy Martsky, who was the main USA Today critic, and basically his 2 year deal with a 2 year option was canceled after 2 years because people thought he was awful on TV. And I saw that as a kid, and it broke my heart because it was kind of like his walk off the main stage when he was in his mid-60s. And he got letters from people, but they were handwritten letters. He got nasty phone calls or had a footprint on his pillow in Pittsburgh when he made a comment during a Pirates game those 2 years when he was working with Tim. He got a little bit of a taste of it, but for the most part, his life and his career was not with the same kind of scrutiny that we have. And I think a lot of that scrutiny, be it Twitter or whatever, it kind of, if you dive into all that, it can take the personality right out of you.
Right.
So my dad was known for his personality. Harry Carey was Harry Carey because of his personality. They weren't the most politically correct guys. I don't know that they could have existed or been themselves in today's world. That doesn't say that's not me saying that it was better back then at all, or they didn't make mistakes. That's not my point.
Right.
My point is now it's harder to have a personality and just be you, because you feel like you're on trial every time you open your mouth. And that's why there's so few guys doing it, because it's hard to jump through those hoops and protect your network and yourself on a live event. It's just not that easy anymore.
And it's everyone. I mean, just me writing a daily column, I feel like I'm one word away from, you know, could all go away. If you have any sort of public forum, you're at the point now where one word, one sentence, it can all disappear. It's a totally different.
It can. And when I wrote about that in my book, I got interviewed by, you know, doing the press tour, and somebody in New York said, you know, you reference a story your dad told on the air one time. Are you saying that was a better time? And I said, no, all I'm saying is it's a different time.
Yes.
And if you pulled those people back, you know, now from the dead and dropped them into a booth now, and they did what they were doing back then, eventually,
right.
And you didn't tell them the surroundings or kind of the nature of what we're doing or the hoops we have to jump through, eventually they'd get themselves into serious trouble. Yeah. And some of that hurt my dad when he was doing the national games, but it has shifted entirely. And you're right, you know, whether you're writing a column or, you know, Todd doing a game or whatever you might be doing, you really have to be careful.
Right.
And you have to try and figure out how something you say can be perceived, even if it's not intended that way.
Right.
And that's a hard way to talk live about an event.
Right. Absolutely. Live TV, that's the other issue. And where sports, you're more of a tightrope because it is live. I want to talk about a couple of lighthearted things here, because you're always good with this stuff. But speaking of, you know, things you said that you may regret and things that could get you in trouble, you had an enormous faux pas that we have already discussed on this podcast back in January, but you botched the name of one of the great living actors, Mark Paul Gosselaar. You have it down now. We're good there. I know he came on and did a bit, but
yes.
That's all straight
out.
Wait,
did you say one of the great American actors?
Yes.
Is that how you?
Yes.
He's become a good friend. So he's got to turn negatives into positives, Jimmy. And in this case, I got his number somehow, and I said, look, I had said it a few times when I did it during a playoff game, possibly, whenever I did it, or it was a big game, maybe a Thursday night game and a big crowd. I said Gosselaar.
Right.
And so he and I ended up talking on the phone, and I said, so here's what I said. He goes, you know what's funny is that's actually how my name is pronounced.
Right.
But because so many people botched it, I guess it's Dutch, it's Hoselaar and not Gosselaar, but I was just trying to be true to his roots, that's all. I was trying to get it right, and the rest of the world has been getting it wrong.
Well, you know, what I thought was, I'm glad that got all cleared up. That was fun, though. That was definitely fun back then, and he did a funny thing on one of the games. You know what was the other, you and Nance together was a big U.S. Open story, and then another story which was huge for me, because I wrote about it, and I remember the numbers on that column being tremendous. Your colleague Joel Klatt did an interview with Koepka, who revealed that in his entire life, he has never once had a hot beverage, coffee, tea, hot chocolate, never. And he said, because he grew up in Florida. I just can't wrap my brain around that revelation.
It's impossible. and I feel like, you know, maybe he said it and now he's going to go down the line with it and not take it back. But I just, no hot chocolate. No, I mean, just because he grew up in Florida. I was born in Florida. I've had plenty of hot drinks. I don't believe it. even though Brooks and I have had our moments,
yes.
I consider him somebody that I really enjoy. And I think he's smart, and I think he's somebody that is pretty honest, and sometimes that gets him in trouble. In this case, I think I don't believe it. I don't care how many times you would tell me, even if it wasn't on TV. That's BS.
The guy travels for a living. He's never been in a cold climate, needed a little. And first of all, I mean, the tragedy of going your whole life and never enjoying a hot chocolate. I feel bad for the guy.
I feel bad for the guy, too. And I live on coffee. If coffee was taken off the face of the planet, I would go with it.
Yeah, it's definitely. If when you get that addiction to it, I mean, if I don't have a cup by, like, I'd say maybe 1-2 in the afternoon, if something's going on, the headache I get is so extreme, and that's not good. But
it's not good. Yeah. I have now. I'm 50, and I've got 1-year-old twin boys.
You need it.
I just need a some sort of a pick line to get that into my system.
Yeah. You mentioned Stern, and I want to get to a couple of things, but we've talked about this before, but now we're getting closer and closer and closer to SmackDown airing on Fox on Friday nights, the day after you'll be calling the Thursday night football game. Are you working on those promos yet? Because I cannot wait.
I want to see them. I can't wait to dive into those. I think it's good. I watched the movie, so I was flying back. Yesterday, these days are all running together. I was flying back from London and watched a movie that had The Rock in it. It was about a wrestling family. It was the origination
Paige.
Of yes. Paige.
Yes, Fighting with My Family. Is the name of it.
Yes,
yes.
I was tired, or I need some sort of intense interventional therapy. I cried during the thing, and I thought, you know what? I'm looking at a WWE SmackDown and watching this whole thing and thinking, you know what? I'm glad it's on Fox. What the hell? This is good. This is going to be a good thing. So I grew up on wrestling because we had wrestling at the Chase in St. Louis. So Dick the Bruiser and Andre the Giant and the Von Erich brothers and we had everybody come through St. Louis. My dad used to do wrestling, so I know all the old school guys. I can't say that I've kept up with it, but I'm going to have to pick my work back up on it.
Was there a specific scene that made you tear up in the movie? I'm just curious.
I was proud of her. You know,
yeah.
She had the moment where she was a fish out of water. She had moved from England. She was there, and Vince Vaughn was drumming her out of the system. Vince Vaughn gave her the little wink and the nod, and she gets the chance from The Rock, and she goes in there and wins, and she's herself to honor her brother, and just the culmination of all those things just had me weeping in seat 4D.
I'm a total Rock fanboy, but his cameo in that movie was tremendous.
There were a few cameos in that movie, and he's a good actor. I have to admit, the guy pulls it off. He's I don't know, I'd vote for him.
So the rumblings I've heard, and from even speaking to people at Fox, I mean, they're going all in on this Friday night SmackDown show. If you got asked I was going to say, if they asked you to maybe appear on it, but you've got football, so you can't really be tough logistically. But would you? Well, let me ask you this: You're definitely going to do Thursday night football again, correct, this season?
Yes.
Is that like a year to year thing for you and Troy? Are you seeing how it goes? At some point, I would imagine it has to get too much for you, or no?
I didn't sense that last year, and right. I look at the schedule this year, and you know, having those weekends off when we're only scheduled to do a single header and just being home makes it work. And I think it was one of those things that when the whole thing fell through with Peyton Manning, they came back around to us, and I thought, you know, it's going to piss me off to see somebody else do it, right. So I might as well do it. And then I enjoyed it, and it felt different than doing Sunday night for Sunday football. So I don't know. I loved it. Yeah. I hope I do it the entire 5 years.
Oh.
As I sit here now, I think I keep reading in the post that Troy's got, like, after 2 years, he can reevaluate it. They can reevaluate it. So I don't know if that's in my contract or not, but right. I'm in if they're in.
All right, before we go, we got to talk about Stern a little bit. Well, I should ask you, the Blues winning the
set. No, what were you going to say? Would I appear in SmackDown?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, only if I'm in the ring. I don't want to broadcast it.
Really? Okay. Well, I'm sure Vince will hear that, and you'll be in the ring.
Yeah, it'd be me, like some sort of battle royale with me and Nance and Al and Tirico. And I mean, come on. Tell me that would get some numbers.
Listen, they just had the two guys from Saturday Night Live doing stuff, so it's not a stretch to have you guys doing stuff. It was Colin Jost and Michael Che who just did a bunch of around WrestleMania. So
yeah, and isn't Dave going to fight Tom Cruise someday?
Oh, we wish.
Can we get that on Fox somehow?
I would hope. I'd love to hear you call that. So
I'll be there.
You mentioned Al. Speaking of Al, the Stern Show has had two big anniversaries in the past couple of weeks. It was the 25th anniversary of the OJ car chase and the prank phone call to Peter Jennings, Baba Booey to you all,
right.
And Al gets on.
Yeah.
And it was the 20th anniversary of the Gary Love tape. If you had to pick,
the best.
If you had to pick one of those as the best moment, which one would you go with?
I think just the Gary Love tape, because when you watch it and listen to it, when they roll tape from back then when they were revealing it, just seeing the anguish on his face of everything he's saying in this tape is just phenomenal. And you feel for him because we've all kind of been there in some fashion or another, maybe not to that degree, but the guy's throwing all he can at the wall to see what's going to stick to get this girl back. And he's dying sitting there listening to it with everybody just crushing him. And the fact that they do that and he puts himself up for that is what makes that show great.
Yeah.
And so that to me is better than the prank call to Peter Jennings. But then, you know, you think about that wasn't the only prank call they made and
right.
or have made since then.
But I agree with you. The Love tape is probably the greatest thing in the history of the show for all the reasons you said. And the fact that it still lives on and it's you can hear it again and still I was still laughing. I probably heard it 100 times. I still laugh when they replayed it last week. The prank call, though.
And how many times? I think in that he said he just goes right to the number 9.
Right, right.
Which, you know, little did we know, years later, it would just be Sour Shoes just crushing.
They played over this past weekend. I don't know how big of a serious listener you are because, you know, on the weekend, Stern's not on. But
well,
they
I was gone.
That's right.
London.
So let me tell you what they had this weekend. They had a 16-minute phone call from Sour Shoes who called into the show and reenacted the entire tape as Gary. And you could not tell the difference if it was Sour or Gary. It's unbelievable.
I just want to know. I want to know more about Sour Shoes, and I know they talk about him a lot. And he's Yeah. The way they describe him is he needs to be watched.
Yes.
But that the fact that he can imitate is one thing, but what makes the great impersonators different and better than everybody else who can just do a voice is that they say things that the other person would say.
Right.
Not just sounding like them, but trying to make the same points.
Right.
And that's what I, you know, when he does Mad Dog, when he does Gary, when he does, you know, all these different voices, it's not just that he sounds like those people. It's that he's making the same points or different points that they would make. That's what has me like crying.
Yep.
Driving down the road, not just the wrestling movie. I cry at this stuff too, in a good way.
You're 100% correct. And the thing that blows me away on top of what you said is there is absolutely a 0 second pause in his transition from Gary to Mad Dog to Scott Farrell to Artie Lang. He does it. The transitions take 0 seconds for him to do it. There's no gap.
And there's no way he's reading that.
No.
He'll do stuff even on baseball when he's talking like Mad Dog. That you go, yeah, he's right.
You
know, like it's a, you know, about the Mets lineup or who should be hitting cleanup or whatever team. I just don't know anybody else that can do that. And yet the way they describe him when he's not doing that stuff is that, you know, he should be on a no-fly list.
I know they've, I mean, you probably know this because you're a big fan. I mean, they've tried to, like Howard wants to hire the guy and put him on staff, but they're just not capable. He's not capable of doing that. He's got issues that they can't wrangle him in, basically.
Right. So something's off.
Yeah.
But
oh yeah.
There's a genius.
Yep.
There's a genius level to him that allows him to do that. And I'm not just saying that. I think there's some like strange thing going on.
Absolutely.
Where he's just like an absolute genius.
Yeah.
Not just the ability to hear it and mimic a voice, but really make cogent points in those voices that are kind of next level.
Absolutely.
Nobody does that.
Yeah.
So it's like Fred Travellina, great.
Yeah. I was going to say, I don't even know if this term's allowed anymore, but it's like it's a true idiot savant. I mean, he has this.
Yeah. I don't even know that that's politically correct anymore.
Yeah. I don't either. I'm nervous now. But
you should be nervous.
He is
my dad said that back in like the 70s.
Right.
Fine about that.
The guy's a genius, but he just can't. He has, you know, he can't be controlled. He could have a job on the Howard Stern show, for God's sake.
Yeah, I know. So I just want to see if you leave that phrase in or if you edit it out.
I'll leave it in. We'll see what happens.
All right. You walk on the wild side.
Oh, yeah. That was really just going so far. The phone call, the prank call, the love tape is better, but that prank call is the greatest prank call in the history of television because of Peter Jennings just not even knowing what's going on. And then Al it's the greatest use of the word lest in the history of the world. Lest anyone thinks.
It is. Yeah. I'm not denying any of that.
Right.
And to think, you know, where we all were, that's, remember where you were when the case was going on. You remember where you were when the verdict was handed in and announced. I mean, all that stuff. It was front and center. I had Jim Murray on my television every like 6 hours a day. And, you know, now here we are 20 years later, whatever it is. That's all well and good, but the pain and anguish that Gary feels and shows watching him try to chase down a girl, I think we can all identify.
Yeah. Where were you for the chase, since you mentioned it?
I was doing a Cardinal game, in St. Louis, and came back, and I think it was still going on by the time I got home, and I was watching it. There's a great 30 for 30 on that, all the different events that were happening then.
Yeah.
The Cardinals were probably playing the Astros or somebody, and I was doing that for St. Louis.
Crazy to think how long ago that was. It's amazing.
Yeah, it is.
So,
crazy to think how old I am.
Yes.
I have one-year-old twins.
When you start this NFL season, it'll be what number for you?
Whatever, 2019 minus 1994. four is.
So 19 and 6, 25. That's a bit.
26. 20, well, 26.
Okay. I was going to say, if it's 25, you have to celebrate because there's a 5 in it, but 20, they should have done that last year. Yeah.
No, it's the 26th. That is last year was the 25th anniversary, but this is the 26th year.
In all seriousness, all jokes aside, in 4 years from now, you're going to be in your 30th year calling the NFL. That is unbelievable. Unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. I can't believe that. Yeah. And, you know, I never expected that, flying out there for spring training in 1994. So that was in March, and I was practicing, doing a game on a television with my dad in the living room. He was my color man. I'd never done football, and we got a tape sent to us from St. Louis, from Channel 4 in St. Louis, put it in the VCR, and hit play, and I sat there in the living room and did play-by-play while my dad did color, and he gave me a few pointers, and I flew out to L.A. as a then 24-year-old and sat in a studio at Fox with Tim Green and broadcast a game off a TV with a headset and all that, but just off a TV. And they came in right after we were done, and the guy kind of pulled me aside like Slugworth and Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, and said, we're going to be hiring you, so you better get an agent. And from that to, you know, at some point, hopefully, God willing, the number you talked about that many years later is just stunning.
Yeah, wild, wild. All right. Well, I appreciate you coming on. We'll All-Star game next week for MLB. Then you get the MLB season rolling, playoffs, and then, of course, the NFL. So we'll get our fill of Joe Buck now with baseball heating up. So,
yep. Get your 140 characters or less in now.
I think
is it still 140 characters? Is that still the cutoff?
It's 280. They doubled it. So now there's
See, there you go. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, there's more room to unleash the venom.
More room. Say, this guy sucks.
Yeah.
His dad, he's lucky his dad was the best, and this guy sucks.
And now they get 280 characters to say that, you know, you're only on the air because of nepotism.
How many times, you do the math, how many times can sucks go into 280?
Let's see. It's four letters, so you got to count the spaces, five letters.
Five letters.
So 280...
Five letters.
Yeah. Oh, sucks. Well, S-U-C-K-S. Well, let's do an exclamation point six, because you got to have it. If you say sucks, always exclamation point. So seven. So 280 divided by seven, 40 times.
Well, we can do that one. Yeah. That's 40 times.
Yep. 40 times.
See, once you got it up to seven and the bigger number was 280, I was good.
There you go. So 40 times you can suck now, according to the listeners.
That's big. Thanks, Twitter.
All right.
Thanks, Twitter.
Well, thank you. I appreciate you coming on the SI Media Podcast, and we'll get you on during football season, hopefully. I'd love to do maybe you and Troy together, or you, Troy, and Aaron together. That could be fun. Got to do that.
Yeah, it would be, although he already slammed podcasts. Who listens to podcasts?
Well, that's Howard's whole big mantra. That's Howard's big mantra. He hates podcasts. He doesn't understand why anyone would listen to a podcast, how they make money. It's not real. It's not radio. He has a whole rant.
He's basically doing an elongated podcast.
Yeah. But he doesn't want to
ever. He's not doing a radio show. Yeah. So, Troy will do it. I'll get him on.
So Troy hates podcasts. All right. That's good to know. I'll be very judicious when I ask if he would do it then. I won't, you know.
Yeah, make it count. He'll do it for you.
All right.
Your SI, for God's sake. Act like it.
All right. I'll be all professional. Thank you, Joe. Appreciate it.
All right.
Be well.
All right, Jimmy.
Take care.
See ya.
Bye. All right. My thanks to Joe Buck of Fox Sports. He's got the All-Star game next week, so we'll hear him then. And then hopefully the next 2 months will fly by and we can hear him on the NFL. They'll use a little NFL football. That wraps up this edition. Again, in the archives, Seth Rollins last week, Scott Van Pelt 2 weeks ago. Subscribe, rate, review. It all helps. And please subscribe, rate, review after you listen to Joe Buck. And we'll see you next week right here on the SI Media Podcast. Thanks.